It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Brenda, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. What's going on? How can we help?
Yes, good morning. I have a Vanguard Target 2025 mutual fund, Roth, in a Roth. And since the rates are going up, the interest rates, I was wondering if it would be a good idea to buy the Vanguard protection, inflation protection fund, and insert it in my Roth alongside of my Target fund.
Okay, so you're thinking about inflation here, and which is certainly an important piece of the equation. If I go to Vanguard's Target 2020 fund, and Vanguard has, I like Vanguard Target funds, and you've got to understand it's not so much about the year, because T. Rowe Price's version of a 2025 might be different than Fidelity's version of 2025, which might be different from Vanguard's version of a 2025. So it's not just about that year, Barbara, or Brenda, it's all about what's inside of that account. So you've got to go and look, hey, well, this particular target fund has 65% in stocks and 35% in bonds. And what makes up that, different Vanguard funds are the components that make up that asset allocation. And I think that for a lot of investors, Brenda, these target funds are a good idea. The only worry I have is that they sometimes will have, and again, this depends on which investment company, they have a lot of exposure to international. And this is another example of that. This has 39% in U.S. and it's got 26% of your assets in international. And that's a pretty significant number. So I think that that's a consideration. But what you're thinking about here, you're thinking about, hey, what if I look at the Vanguard Treasury Inflation Protected Fund?
Right.
You're talking about TIPS. And right. I think TIPS are, they're really a small part of the bond market. It's a fraction of what's happening in the bond market. However, these are backed by the Treasury. They have an incredible amount of safety baked into them, because they're not, again, they're just like a Treasury bond, bill, or note, a Treasury inflation-protected security. It's guaranteed by the government. So as long as you hold these to maturity, you're going to get your money back. The problem we have right now is that so far, inflation has not really kicked in yet. Now, remember, the Federal Reserve is watching inflation really closely, Brenda. You've got they want to see inflation at 2%. It's not there yet. It's still not there yet. But the good thing about a TIP is that when it does get there, and this is my thought on TIPS, you want to buy them when inflation is low, headed higher, not the other way around. Mm-hmm. What we don't want to do is buy TIPS when inflation is at 3 or 3.5%, headed down to 1. The environment that we're in today is that inflation is likely headed higher. So I do think for investors, TIPS are a decent idea. And Vanguard is the kind of company that has a very broadly diversified fund that does TIPS. So if you're, and again, remember, the way this works is you effectively get your money back plus whatever inflation is. So if you have a year where there's no inflation, you're not going to get any interest. If you wait, though, and hold TIPS and inflation finally does arrive and we get a 3 or 4% inflation year, it's going to be really good for those investments. So I think if you're considering to add to the bond part of your portfolio, Brenda, TIPS, this is probably a good time to be looking at TIPS. And add that in addition to what you're doing in the Target 2025. Let's go to Rob, who joins us from north of the north. Rob, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. How can I help, my friend?
Hey, good morning, Wes. Thanks for taking my call. Quick question for you. Just kind of on a very high level, I'm curious to know what is reasonable rate, and I don't want to mess my words up here, but reasonable rate of return or income, how much income could you expect, say, for every million you had invested? What would be if you never wanted to touch the principal, like if you wanted to not run the risk of running out of money, for every $1 million invested, could you expect, you know, $50,000 or $80,000 or $100,000 in income?
Rob, I think you're really... So this is an important question to kind of clarify for what you're asking for our listeners. You've got a very reasonable question. Hey, how much should I... There's two ways you can look at this. How much rate of return should I expect over time in any given year? But that's not quite your question. You're talking about on the back end. It's like once I stop saving, how much can I withdraw? What's a reasonable withdrawal rate over time is really what you're asking.
Exactly.
And that's probably the most important variable in any financial plan is that withdrawal rate. How much water is coming out of the faucet is the key to whether the reserves, whether the sink or the bathtub stays full of water or not. That is the question we all have in retirement. And it's of great debate, by the way. And there's been lots of studies on this number. The agreed upon number, Rob, in financial planning for many, many, several decades now has been 4.1 or 4.2% plus inflation every year, meaning that if we get three, you ratchet that number up for whatever inflation is. So if inflation goes up by 3% and your withdrawal rate, 4% of $1 million is 40,000, and it goes up by 3%, then it goes up it goes up by not 4% plus 3 is 7. It doesn't go up that much, but just the increase in inflation. So your 40,000 in a given year goes to 41. Or 41.5, depending on what inflation is. That is the conservative number to plan on over time. Now, there's a lot of other ways to look at this. I think of it from an you had also mentioned income. Well, if you think about having a portfolio that's got multiple different areas, and this is the way I like to look at it, we've got dividend-paying stocks that are paying 3. You have bonds, let's say, right now in this low yield environment that are paying 3.5. You have REITs and MLPs that are paying 5, let's say. And they average out to, let's say the whole portfolio averages 3.5%, right? Just in income. The one distinction that we all have to remember is that we're all investing for total return, but total return is two pieces. The equation is growth plus income. You can't necessarily control the growth number in any given year because we could have a really good market and assets appreciate a lot, or they might sink in value in any given year. So that's variable. The income piece of the equation, so total return is growth plus income. The income equation, that's really steady. So if you've got a portfolio that's kicking out 3.5% every year, then over time, if you are just pulling that number out, even though your principal may go up or down or up or down, you're never dipping into it because you're just taking the income. And right now, that number, because rates are really low, dividend yields are fairly low because the stock market is relatively high, you've got a scenario where your income piece of the equation is pretty modest. It's not negligible at all, but let's say it's 3.5%. Then, so to me, I look at that number and I say, you could take that out forever, right? Why, if you're only taking what the portfolio is producing, then there's no way you ever spend down the principal, right? There's some discipline that comes with that. And for most people, they need more than 3.5%. So the question is, how much beyond that do you take? And I think a safe number over time, and depends on how early you retire, I think of it as more of a 5% number over time. Without inflation, because I also think in real life, retirement spending is deflationary. So a lot of financial plans, if you run a standard financial plan, it'll ratchet up your spending by 3% every year. So that if you're 60 and you're spending 50 grand a year, by the time you're 80, it's doubled, right? That doesn't really happen unless we get rapid inflation in America. From what I see in the real world, and I've been an advisor for almost 20 years, we don't spend a tremendous amount more when we're 85 relative to when we are 65, because life gets a little bit less expensive because we are doing a little less. Now, healthcare is the exception, Rob, so I understand that. Healthcare is still the wild card in all of this. But I would plan on conservatively a 4.25% rate of withdrawal for the rest of time. So on $1 million, that's 40 to 45 grand a year, right? Or plus inflation. Or you can look at it more of a static 5, but you don't want to start out, if retirement starts at 60 and it's an early retirement, taking a full 5% that early in the cycle is a little bit too much. So you want to start out as low as you can on you want the faucet to be only open as much as you need. So you want to, you'd preferably like it to be in the 3-3.5 range early on, and then slowly grow over time. So the older you get, it can maybe even be above that 5%. But over your retirement lifespan, you want it to average around that 5 number.
Okay.
And that way, and even the William Bengen study that says 4.2% plus inflation, that shows that no matter what market cycle you're investing in, and this is effectively a balanced portfolio, no matter what 30-year period you're investing in, if you're only taking 4.2% plus inflation every year, even if your timing's terrible, Rob, you don't run out of money for at least 32 years. So that takes you from age, call it age 65 to age 95, 98, which for most of us is okay. We've got to run here, but Rob, have a great rest of your Sunday, and thanks for listening to Money Matters.
Thank you, Wes.
Hi, this is Scott Slade from Atlanta's Morning News and WSB. Our 24-hour news center delivers updates 4 times an hour all weekend. Depend on it. We'll be back Monday morning, 4:30 to 9 for breaking news and traffic and weather every 6 minutes. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning to the phones. Mary joins us from Decatur. Mary, what's up? How can I help?
Hi. I have a question about a transfer of funds from a retirement kind of government fund with very low fees.
TSP, I bet. Was it the TSP plan? Thrift Savings Plan?
Yes.
Okay. Into an IRA, it sounds like.
Yes.
Okay. And so what's going on?
So the fee management fee is about $350 a month, and it basically was to have access to, I guess, one of these programs that if the rate goes so low or so high, they can make an automatic transaction so that your money isn't exposed to market risk as much.
So it's a market timing model. So it's $4,200 a year in fees. And what's the amount? What's the total?
It was right now it's worth 286. I think when I went in, it was 280 or something.
Okay,
like
so that's exactly 1.5% a year is the management fee. So how is this something you've done for a while, or has it just been 2017?
I did it in May 2016.
And how are we doing so far since May? Is it how much? You just told me. You said it. You started with 280, and it's at 286 today, right? Mm-hmm.
I'm not impressed at all, particularly since I left the government. The management fee at that point was 1%. I mean, it was 0.07% or something, very low.
Yeah.
So I actually think I'm losing, and I'm not pleased about that. I don't really think it was a good investment decision.
Well, it's tough. I will tell you that if you go back over the last year, and this isn't the exact period of time, but if you go back a year from now, if I pull up this chart, I'm looking at the S&P 500 is up about 16%. The Dow is up about 19%. Now, that's July to July, but really yours is almost, I would say, virtually flat. So, and you're paying 1.5% a year to do it. Well, what's 6,000 on 2? You've made about 6 on 280. There we go. 6 divided by 280. Yeah, you're up about 2%, and the market's up about, well, call it 15%. So yeah, so you're paying a lot you've gotten almost no benefit out of this, Mary. Now, that part of that could be a lot of these timing models are promising the world as though they're going to capture all the upside of the market and just none of the downside, and that just rarely happens. Usually, I see one of these timing models that's meant to be to protect you. They really very often they do a pretty good job of protecting But they just are. It's a lot like parking your money in a dark in the mud, and it just gets stuck, right, and it sits there. So, I think to some extent you're probably paying too much. Number one, it's the strategy is the real issue beyond the cost. So, I think it's time to look elsewhere here for a variety of reasons. If you'd like to find me and the Money Matters team, Mary, we're happy to talk through some other options. Go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Those emails come straight to me and the team. Enjoy the weekend. More Money Matters straight ahead.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Robert, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can I help?
Hey, good morning, Wes. I have an inherited IRA, and I was wondering, what do you suggest I do? What do the rich, successful, wealthy people do with their RMDs? I know I have to take it out every year. I think it's ridiculous in a sense when you're trying to, you know, grow it over time, but that's just something that, you know, you have to do. Otherwise, you get penalized. So
I like the thought that you're saying, what are the rich, successful? That's who's listening to Money Matters, by the way. It's the rich, successful folks that are listening to Money Matters. In fact, Robert, whenever I get a call from somebody who's, let's say, in their 20s, I always think, you know, that caller is going to be rich one day if they're not already rich. There's something about having an eye on this part of the equation, the money side of the equation, which, of course, is not everything to life at all, but it's kind of an important part. So that's an aside. Now, you're saying, how old are you, by the way?
48.
So you're 48 and you have an IRA that you have to take RMDs because it's an inherited IRA, not because you're 70 and a half.
Yeah, I was fortunate to receive this after my father passed away last year, and he left me this inherited IRA. It's a very well-diversified portfolio, and I have a couple of financial advisors that I'm working with, and I'm still have yet to call your office back because you said you wanted me to give you a call back. I spoke with you a little over couple of months ago, and you said for me to call your office and speak with you more in depth about it, but I haven't had, you know, the chance to do that.
That's okay. So, well, I'm still there. I'm still there every day. So the Robert, but I will say this though: what do most folks do with their RMDs? Well, I would say about half of the folks that I've worked with over the years use the required minimum distribution because that's the cash flow that they're starting to live on. And the math actually works out to some extent. It kind of works out because when I do retirement planning, a really safe number as a withdrawal rate is 3.5 to 4%. So if you're only taking 3.5 to 4% a year from your assets, you should be able to do that indefinitely, as long as you have a balanced portfolio that has fixed income and stocks, and it grows even a little bit over time. In fact, the agreed upon number in financial planning is 4.1 or 4.2% plus the increase of inflation, whatever inflation is every year. So that number goes up a little by little on your nest egg to account for the rising cost of goods. In this case, an RMD, if you're 70 and a half, is around 3.7% a year, which is close to that number. So that kind of, to some extent, works out. A lot of folks live on it. In your case, at age 48, because you have an inherited IRA, and the stretch IRA rule applies to you. So you're now taking this out over your life expectancy. So I would suspect your number, I don't have a chart in front of me, is probably what, 2.5 to 3% a year?
I believe so. And I think, you know, if I have to take it out, I'd probably take it out maybe two times a year, take a certain amount out like I did for next year, and take one half, some of it out at one point of the year, and then at the end of the year, take another one like around your birthday or something like that. So
the other thought, Robert, though, with the other thought on these RMDs is that, and again, you'd ask, hey, what do the wealthy, successful folks do? Well, some people live on it, and others just say, look, I don't need it. So you don't even really have to think about it being uninvested. Now, yes, it has to come out, and you they come out in cash, you put it in another account. In order to do that, the IRS basically gets a note that says, hey, Robert took out X amount from his inherited IRA. We're going to tax him on that. But it doesn't mean that you can't turn right around and reinvest it. So don't think of these RMDs as money that you have to pull out and spend. If you don't need it, and I think that was your kind of original question, there's no rule that says you can't just reinvest it the very day it hits your account. So it goes from an IRA to an after-tax account, and boom, you can reinvest it that very day. And that's what the other half of folks do to answer your question. 404-872-0750, the number in the studio. We're going to continue to go to the phones here. Let's go to John in Buford. John, what's going on, man? How can I help?
Well, I've just accumulated a lot of cash, and I don't know what to do with it. I have a wonderful pension. I've been retired for 9 years. We've been able to save a couple thousand dollars a month out of my pension, and I've invested it a lot. I still have earned income, and so we do the Roth every year.
So how old are you, John?
78.
And you're still working?
I have a very interesting side occupation.
Can we ask what it is?
I'm a musician.
Oh, well, that's a cool side profession. So you're still playing music?
Yes.
And you're still making money doing it?
Yes.
And so there's no reason to stop, and you're going to continue to do that. So you can still keep putting money into Roth, but you also have a pension.
Yes.
All right, so then the issue is that the issue here is you've got too much cash, and which obviously is a good problem to have, right?
Yeah.
You have plenty of income, another great problem to have. I hear a collective sigh of woe is me from all of our listeners for John here. He's a hip musician that's 78. He's still having fun earning money and too much money in cash. The question, though, John, what's the percentage of money in cash? If you were to look at your cash plus your investments and everything.
I've got 15% of it in cash.
Which I don't think is a crazy high amount. And whether you have 100,000 or a million or 5 million, to have 15% in cash, definitely on the high side. My rule of thumb is really 1 to 10%. So I think that 10% is about as much as you ever really need. So if you have $1 million, 100,000 in cash is plenty in cash. The 2 million, you've got 200,000 in cash. So in your case, 15, yeah, that's high, but it also isn't ridiculously high. I think it's a frustrating number to be in. I think the question, it's a frustrating asset class to be in because it's not doing anything. And you can have money sitting in any of these big banks or brokerage companies, whether it's Wells Fargo or Vanguard or Schwab or any of these big brokerage companies or Fidelity, and their money markets really don't pay a lot. And even though the Fed's been raising interest rates, money markets are still not passing that on to you. In fact, I think that's a big part of how a lot of these financial institutions expect to really generate profits over the next several years is that that's a big part of their business. It went away when the Fed took interest rates to zero. Today, as that goes higher and higher, they make a comfortable spread on your money market money. Now, with that, I guess my question is, what's the reason long term, or who do you leave in this to? Do you have a bunch of kids? Do you have a charity? Do you have, what's the goal? You don't really need the money. It doesn't sound like you can spend it. What's long term? What do you want to happen to this money?
Well, I want to go to my children and my grandchildren. My wife just died a month ago.
Oh God, I'm sorry. My God.
And I am having to rearrange things. I haven't done it yet, but I'm in the process of getting there. I help grandchildren with college. I'm not paying the full amount, but we had 529 plans, and so we've been able to help that. When I said I have cash, I mean just in a money market. I've also got about $50,000 in CDs, and that's cash too.
So John, here's my thought, is that part of helping you solve this is for, and I know you're going through a lot because your wife just passed away, so there's obviously no rush to do any of this, but I think that as you start to wrap your arms around all of this, I want you to think about the family and your kids and your grandkids as, you know, all the money that you've accumulated over all these years, it's really, ultimately, it's going to them. So the, yeah, so the money, particularly in your case, because you already have a pension and it's already bringing in more than you need. So really, the money doesn't have your time horizon in your life anymore.
Yes.
It's really their time horizon. So it's, if your kids are in their 40s and 50s or 60s, and then your grandkids are 20s, 30s, this money has a giant time horizon. And in that, I want you to start thinking about, well, hey, if you were 30 again, John, or you were 40, how would you be investing? And the answer would probably be more significantly or heavier in the stock side or the equity side of the market. And that, I think, is where that cash goes. You don't have to invest all of it, but 5 or 10% of the 15 or 2/3 of that 15 could easily go back into dividend paying stocks. I'm going to talk more about why I like dividend paying stocks, John, as an example, as we go through the next hour and a half of the show. Steve, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can I help?
Hey, Wes, I had a question for you. I appreciate your taking this call. You were just speaking with someone, a caller who, you know, was talking about having money in money market accounts and so forth. And I've been in Vanguard for a while, and I have a range of things in there. My question, I guess, was this: in the VMSXX account, which is the Vanguard Municipal Money Market, I believe it's a tax-free account.
Yeah, the yield is something like about 0.75.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the yield is. I was mainly interested in getting away from paying taxes on it, because years ago when I was in there and I had a bunch of cash in there, you know, I get a pretty big tax hit at the end of the year. So
I'll tell you what, Steve, hang on one sec, please. Let's go to quick news weather traffic. And this is an important question. Money market, a lot, there's billions of dollars sitting in money market doing nothing.
Right.
And let's talk about the expense on that. So hang on just a second here. You're listening to Money Matters right here, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. We'll cover breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts throughout the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Go back to the phones here. We took a call from Steve. Steve, are you still with me?
Yeah, I am, and I did get some specific information for you. I'm looking at my account, and on these...
And let me just refresh our listeners here, Steve. If you're just tuning in, the question goes back to, here we are in this environment where for so many years, the Fed kept their target Fed funds rate at zero or virtually zero, and that pulled down yields we've seen in everything, the bond market, and particularly when money is just sitting in cash at a bank. So your money market yield that we used to get 2% and 3% on, today, go back a year, paid virtually zero. Today, those money market yields have crept back up. And I think this is a really good point. The reason I want to take your call, Steve, is that some money markets have crept back up close to 1%, and some have pretty much stayed in the 0.25% to 0.5% range, which is a pretty big difference, particularly if you have a lot of money just sitting in cash at one of these big brokerage firms. So I think the reason I wanted to take the call, I think that it's been so many years, investors have gotten very used to their cash paying zero. It shouldn't be paying zero anymore. So your question, Steve.
My question is, I'm in two different money market accounts with Vanguard. One is the Vanguard Municipal Money Market Fund, which is VMSXX. I believe it is a tax-free account. And then in my SEP IRA, I'm in something exactly the same. It's just a SEP. So it's the Vanguard Prime Money Market Fund, VMMXX. And I'm looking at, you know, what's in there, and what I'm seeing is that the yield, one-year yield on this, is 0.59% on the VMMXX.
So, Steve, though, that's what you've received over the past year?
Correct, in income for having money in it.
Got it. So over the next year, those should all be getting higher and higher. If you look at the Prime Money Market Fund today, at Vanguard. And this is slightly different. As I bring up this list, this is VMRXX, which is Prime Money Market Admiral, so it might have a slightly higher yield than what you're talking about.
Here's where I'm confused. I've got over $100,000 in my VMFXX fund, but the yield is like 0.4-something for the entire last year, but it is a tax-free account. So on the other hand, I don't pay taxes. The whole reason I went into it is because I had $150,000 plus in cash in there, and I thought I'm better off on the end of not paying a tax than taking a slightly higher yield and getting hit with a tax at the end of the year where I have to pay it all back and then a little bit more some. So,
but that sounds about right, though, Steve. But what we, with money markets, it's very much about where your current yield is, because your current money market yields are going to adjust to the Fed. And now, if you look at the SEC yield, which will be more indicative of what you should get over the next year, if you look at that same fund, VMSXX, the Municipal Money Market Fund at Vanguard, the new SEC yield is 0.77. So it has definitely gone up a bunch. The expense is 0.15, which is arguably more than the stock market, but the net yield on this is about 0.75%, and that's a tax-free yield. So remember, you've got to look at the municipal bond market in order to figure out what happens to these municipal bond money markets, and your yield over the next year has certainly gone up. So I think the message, and I appreciate your call, Steve, because I think it's a reminder to all of our listeners that yields have gone up from the Fed. They have manually raised their target rate. That means that these big banking institutions can effectively get a higher guaranteed rate on the money that they effectively coordinate with the Fed. And then in that case, in turn, the money market rates should be going up. So make sure you take a look at your money market yield, particularly if you're going to have a lot of money sitting, $100,000, $200,000 in your case, of money that's just sitting there, a full 1% higher is pretty substantial. So I think we all need to keep our eye out for that and inquire about that, depending on what institution that our money is, whatever custodian we have our money with. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, easy to do so, go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Those emails come straight to me. Stay tuned for more Money Matters right here, News 95.5 and AM 750, straight ahead.